Welcome to WebRush, the weekly talk show that brings you stories of real-world development from industry experts and developers like you and me. Each week, Ward Bell, Dan Wallin, Craig Shoemaker, and John Papa find out what it takes to write, deploy, and maintain apps that stand up to the demands of the real world. And now, here are your hosts.
Welcome back to WebRush. This is episode 152. In this week's episode, we're going to be talking about creating a successful front-end onboarding plan. My name is John Papa, along with my co-hosts, Dan Wallin and Craig Shoemaker. Dan, I hear that you're really struggling out there in Arizona with the heat. How's it going for you?
Well, this is normal. We love the, you know, depths of hell type heat in our area.
So it's episode 152, normal. Or is that the temperature where you're living?
Oh, you know, so give or take 10 Fahrenheit, yeah. Nah, we're cooling down. It's only like, I don't know, it's only going to be 108 today.
Wow. Oh, gee, what's that in Celsius? Is that like 40?
That's probably what, 40 or something, or probably a little higher. Probably 42. I don't know. I have to look it up. Yeah, it's, you know, it's not too bad.
Wow. So, Craig, we live in a much colder place, don't we?
Than that's Dan chilly. Does. Yeah. I have to put on my snow jacket in the middle of the summer where we live, for sure.
Really?
I do, because the problem with Florida is that it's so hot outside everywhere. Everywhere inside is completely cold, and I'm just a weenie when it comes to temperatures. So I'm always bundling up, and my family laughs at me constantly. So I'm glad to be a source for their entertainment.
It is really kind of strange. And Dan, you've come to Florida quite a bit. You know, there's a lot of conferences here, so I'll get the joy. That's when we get together. And outside, it'll be 95 and humid, so it feels like 110 in Fahrenheit. And then we go into the conference center, and, you know, Dan and I have got long sleeve shirts on and jackets and pants. It's like 65 degrees inside.
Yeah. Like, conference centers are always so freaking cold.
Who decided that you should be in a cooler? Like, it's like you could hang meat in these conference centers. And then you go outside and you're sweating. You go back in. It's like, I don't know. Sorry, I'm getting all revved up here today. We should do a whole show on how the perfect temperature is not going to be a 50 degree variance inside and outside.
Right.
Yeah, like nobody listened to that topic. So let's instead talk about a topic that is much more interesting. And this is something I think not a lot of people pay as much attention to as they should, especially when you're hiring new teams or you're bringing new people on. Have you ever out there joined a company or joined a new team and you were just expected to know where your laptop is, know how to get it configured, know where all the meetings are to go to, know all the software you have to download, and just how everything's supposed to work? Like, it's just magical, right? It just happens.
It happened last year, John, when I joined. No, I'm kidding. Actually, Microsoft was really good. fact, John helped me.
It is interesting how companies don't always put as much thought into it as they should. And I, even where we are, we should always put more thought to as well. But our guest today is Donna Yudelovich, and she's here to talk to us about this topic. And she's done quite a bit of work on this, actually, and provided YouTube videos and content. And I'm expecting an encyclopedia to come out soon on this as well. Should we see that from you, Donna?
Almost. So first of all, I'm really happy to be here. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting topic that, especially in smaller startups, isn't given much attention. I bet Microsoft is amazing at that. I've worked at companies that had a great onboarding experience. But in the smaller startups, it's something that is lacking for sure.
Yeah, and we'll get into talking about all this. And I really can't wait to hear about what your experience is and your tips and recommendations and kind of why to go through this. For those of you out there who want to learn a little bit more about Donna, Donna's a senior front-end developer currently leading the front-end architecture at a stealth mode startup. She's more than 12 years of industry experience working in various companies, including Fiverr. Fiverr is very cool. It's actually where we got our logo created for the podcast.
I've used Fiverr as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Fiverr is amazing. And speaking about Fiverr, they have a great onboarding program. And it's kind of how I based the onboarding structures that I created and all the onboarding plans that I've created for other teams. because it was so successful and having experienced it myself as an onboarded member, I think it's really a good example.
So Dana, tell us a little bit about what does onboarding mean to you and why is this an important topic for teams?
So onboarding is basically the process of getting a new member on your technical team to be familiar with the code base and the tools that you're using and actually be a productive member of the team as quickly as possible. It is sometimes skipped or not done in a complete manner because we're looking to get a good return value on that person, right? We're kind of looking to get that person to be as productive as possible and as quickly as possible. And that is why sometimes we say, why would we invest or waste time onboarding that person where we could just start giving them tasks and having them just produce value right away. But that is actually the problem when you don't give that person a good onboarding structure and a good onboarding plan, then you actually waste time in the long run because you create more frustration for that person. They need to actually go through, when working on a feature or a task, they go through a process of trial and error, right? They don't really know your code base. They don't know who to approach, who's the owner of a feature. They don't know exactly what conventions you have. So you might come into a stage of like a pull request. And then if they didn't get onboarded properly, you would just be like, what is this code? It doesn't even match our conventions. It's not what I intended at all. You didn't use that tool. You didn't use that TypeScript object. Like, well, what is going on? Obviously, you didn't do a good job onboarding that person. It's not their fault. So what I like to kind of compare it to, since I come from the karate world, I'm a black belt in karate, just throwing it out there.
Oh, very cool.
yeah. So basically, it doesn't matter how senior a person is. They could be a black belt in JavaScript, a black belt in TypeScript, whatever. They are a white belt in your organization when they come in. They're new, they're fresh. So they could be a black belt, they could be a senior, but you should treat them as a white belt when they're coming in to your organization and get them through those stages until they can become a black belt. You can't skip those stages. You can't just throw them in and expect them to be like a purple belt or whatever. You have to go and whip them and step them up those belts. That's kind of how I like to compare it.
That's a great analogy, actually. I really like that because I have been in the organizations. What's that?
I don't think I could ever use that one since I have a black belt that holds my hands mine's, up.
A physical black belt.
I have a physical brown belt. remind me, Donna, we're not gonna get into a fight then because that might not end well for me.
Yeah, we're virtual, so
that's right.
Hey John, I have this great idea for a mobile app. I want to use native features like the camera, photo gallery, and geolocation, but I just don't have the time to learn a new language like Swift.
Yeah, but you do know JavaScript and web tech like React, Angular, and Vue, right?
I do, but how does that help me?
Well, if you use the Ionic framework, you can use your JavaScript skills and you get fully styled iOS and Android mobile components. Plus, it uses a capacitor to talk to all the native device platforms.
So if I use Ionic and Capacitor, I don't have to learn a new language. My JavaScript skills give me what I need to build a cross-platform app.
Absolutely. And you can check it out at ionic.link/webrush.
I'll do it.
I really like it because what you describe, it sounds like such a contradiction to say, you know, I want John or Craig to be super productive right now. So let's just, Craig, get to work. And then, like you said, maybe a month into it or maybe even weeks into it, you look at the code, maybe you have a code review or something along those lines, and you're like, Craig, what are you doing? You know, and then Craig, you're like, well, you didn't tell me to do anything else.
I'm
so,
coding.
Yeah, there's exactly.
You set me loose. I'm doing what you said.
Exactly. So it's like when you buy something like an appliance, and you buy the cheapest one because you just need it to work right now. And, you know, you don't want to invest too much in it, but then it breaks 2 months after and you have to go and buy either the same one again or a better one, a much better quality one. So being cheap kind of costs you more in the long run.
I think that an investment aspect of it, I'm wondering if that's part of the friction that exists in order to make these happen, because it seems like the time investment probably isn't a lot to be able to say, give someone a week or, you know, whatever they need in order to get done. But I would imagine like it's this information, this material is probably relatively, I don't know if I would say expensive, but it's just like to get someone to stop what they're doing, go and document everything, outline all that stuff. Would you say that that's part of what people hesitate to build an onboarding plan is because someone has to go and build it up front?
It could be one of the reasons, since it does require some to stop what you're doing, exactly like you said, and go dedicate time to actually write it down. But from my perspective, you do it once and then it's reusable to every new team member that comes in. So it's really not a waste of time. It's like precious information that you're building up for the next generations coming into your team.
Yeah.
So I think it, in the long run, it absolutely pays off. Like in general, like documenting stuff, having like a wiki in your organization, that is, again, priceless information.
Where do people start if they're new to this? I mean, you've obviously done it. You've thought through this a lot. You have a lot out there on this. But let me back up. In addition to where do they start, what are some of the number one hangups you found that new folks coming in run into, like right day one?
Oh, that has to be the local environment. So if someone is new to the team, the first thing I would definitely get them started on is setting up a local environment. That is usually when a lot of errors come up. You think it's easy to set up your company's local environment, and in reality, that person is trying to install like an NPM package and they get an error and then they need to install dependencies and all of that kind of stuff. So I would definitely get that over with right from the start. And actually, it's beneficial to have some sort of onboarding document on the local environment specifically. So which steps you need to take? Do you need to install a certain node version? Do you need to have certain tools for your command line? Which NPM packages to install? End files that you need to have your local environment running smoothly? Anything that you need to do locally is super important on day one and can cause a lot of like friction. And that actually really provides that person with an ability to start not contributing immediately, obviously, but exploring the code base. So you have an actual local environment that you can set up and start playing with, start looking how it's built, how it works. So that's definitely something I would put as number one thing to start off on a onboarding plan.
Do you have some kind of a template or an outline that people can, like if a company wanted to start doing this, some of our audience out there, and they wanted to start with this, I know for me, staring at a blank document, like you mentioned a Google Doc, that sounds like a great place to start this, but what do you fill in and like what sections are important, like the local environment, you mentioned one. Do you have some kind of template that you can guide folks to?
I actually can guide it right now. And it's actually a really good idea. So I might actually write an article about it or something so people have an actual template. In general, so I would definitely start with the local environment and also all the tools that person would need, especially if we're talking about a remote team, which is a lot of companies going remote right now because of COVID. I personally am 100% remote at the moment. So it's super important to have all the, you know, passwords and credentials, have all the tools clearly listed, what they need to install, which credentials to use. You obviously can use like Dashlane or whatever password management you know, tool to not just have it hard coded somewhere, but have it really easily available and very clear what tools they need, the IDE, the DB interface, whatever tools you use in your workflow. So after you make sure that that person has access to, you know, all those tools, also make sure they have access to obviously their Gmail account and following their GitHub account, Circle CI, all the stuff you need access to as a developer. I would also make sure that they are added to all the relevant Slack rooms. So the dev team Slack room, I think every company has it, or the Teams room. So that is very important to add them to all the to rooms. And, you know, there's sometimes Slack rooms just for notifications, like from Sentry or Grafana or stuff like that. So add them over there. And yeah, introduce that person to the team. It's an exciting time for a new member. So it's kind of, you know, not on the technical level, but more on the human level. Make them feel comfortable. Make them celebrate the fact that they're a new member in a new company, starting a new chapter in their life. So it's something that's important to note. Obviously, after that would come a codebase overview. So you should align that person on how the codebase is set up. So sometimes we work in a monorepo. Sometimes we work with microservices. So that's a good point to explain how that works. For example, we work with Yarn workspaces, and we have packages and services in a monorepo. So that would be a good point to go over that and the general structure. How you, how does the microservices or the packages connect with each other? How do you work with them locally? Sometimes you need to use npm link, stuff like that. With Yarn workspaces, it's actually amazing. It works so smoothly. That also needs a little bit of intro on how to work with it. And I would also go over, if we're speaking about a front-end onboarding, so all the main views. Let's say we have, you know, a profile page. So we want to go over, like, and it's a prominent part of our platform or our, you know, environment. So we want to go over that view, explain what's going on there for them to be familiar with it. Just explain in general about state management. If you use Redux or Mobex or Context, that would be a good point to just generally go over it. It doesn't have to be a deep dive, because, you know, you can deep dive into specific areas that that person is going to be working on, but an overview. Just main React components that they should be familiar with it. Reusable components. So definitely if you have a reusable component library that you work with in your company, that is a good point to get a person familiar with it. Go over the most used components like buttons and inputs. If you have Storybook, that is amazing. It's an amazing tool. It's kind of a catalog of components. So a new person coming into the team can actually see which components you already have. And it actually provides you with a doc. So it provides you with all the types and all the props of that component and how to use it, with code examples automatically out of the box. So that's amazing. And you could use it with Chromatic, which is an amazing tool that gives you access publicly to a public link, not public, but with permissions, but it's an actual link that you can send people to review the components. Also to be noted is CSS. How do you handle CSS in your code base? Do you use JSS, or do you use good old CSS or SAS, or there's so many ways. Do you use global classes? Do you use, you know, there's all kinds of ways to handle CSS. So I would go over how that's used, if you have any conventions, syntax for CSS.
So basically, there's no reason to have an onboarding document, because all these things could just be, you know, you could wing it, right? You could just... Everybody's going to learn this on their own, right? You're making me worried. I'm like, oh my gosh, starting a new job sounds so daunting. I thought I was just going to come in and write some React or Svelte code and that's it. But you're actually making a really good point of why that's like just one piece of the work that we do, the actual coding. If you don't know
so many areas, right?
Just some little things, like you said, like, you know, where's your Slack group or your Teams group? And, you know, what email addresses or lists do you have to be part of? And where do you find out where, like, the company's processes are that you need to, or the team's process, the meeting schedules, style guidelines? Like, do you, if you might not have a style guide, but if Dan, if I'm working on Dan's team and he wants me to code it this way, everything's got to be purple. And that's the way Dan wants it. If that's not purple, I don't want to make Dan mad. So all that's
By the way, at Fiverr, we had like actual like style guides of how the order of rules inside the CSS should look like. So Z index should come at the end and position should be on the top and anything else should be ordered by, you know, the ABC. It's like, and if you didn't know that, you'd get like rejection after rejection on your PR just because of that. So it's important to, you know, to align on those things before.
Do you see that a style guide becomes a prominent part of this?
It could definitely become an important part because it helps new people know how to structure their code. Makes it a little easier later in code reviews. But it really depends on your team, on your view, on how the code should look like. It could be an important part if you really want your code to be structured in a certain way, if you have your conventions that you're comfortable with and you want to keep it consistent across the code base, then yeah, I would definitely invest some time in writing a style guide. I also want to mention as a general note that the onboarding plan should be shared between the new member and the onboarding member. So it should be some kind of doc that both sides can look at. So it's not just something that I, as an onboarding member, like as a person that is doing the onboarding for another person, that it's only available to me. It should be available to both sides. So you can actually see what the process is going to look like, what you're going to be learning day after day. So it's very clear. It's not overwhelming. It's not something that you're in the dark about. It's something that you know what's going to happen, what to expect, when it's going to start, when it's going to end. There's like a start point, there's an end point, you know, when you've completed the onboarding. So that's just the general note about that.
So I would imagine you could do all of this through, I mean, you could just use a text file if you want to, you could use a wiki, you could use a Google Doc. Have you found that there's any tools or techniques that lend themselves well to organizing and tracking all this information?
Personally, I use Notion, but definitely any tool that allows you to view, I think Google Doc is a good option. There's nothing specific that I found to, you know, manage this on, you know, the doc level. I think anything that allows both sides to view it and maybe edit it or add notes would be suffice. Yeah.
So John, one of the things I like about AG Grid, which is a data grid component for the kind of complex grid scenarios that we encounter all the time in enterprise apps, one of the things I really like about it is that it works for a variety of frameworks, Angular, React, Vue, or just vanilla JS. Does that ring a bell for you?
Oh, it really does. There's all these different companies that I work with where they have no choice but to use a lot of these different tools because they have different teams working on them. So being able to port their code or share that code and that technical investment they have is really important to them.
Yeah, well, it's important to us. Ideally, we're a consulting company and, you know, we never know what our client's going to want to use, Angular, React, or Vue, but they're all going to need a grid. And it's great to be able to reach for the one grid that works everywhere, AG Grid.
You know, at any size company too, because you could have these teams that maybe they only use one framework, but eventually they're going to switch to another one and be able to take that investment again and use it, reuse it is really nice.
So if a multi-framework grid makes sense to you, you should certainly go over there and check out AG Grid at ag-grid.com and tell them Warden John sent you.
So we keep hearing about Notion in pretty much every episode, and Craig keeps sending me side messages saying I should learn more about it. I got to be honest, I've only been to the homepage. Maybe we could take just a minute or two out there because maybe there's other folks who are listeners who use Notion, but I'm sure some don't. What is Notion, Dana, and why would somebody use that?
So Notion is kind of like a wiki. It allows you to create basically a doc library. So you can edit those docs and create them in any way you want. And it's super flexible since you can create task boards inside of docs. You can really easily change components into other components. You have to-do lists. You have basically any kind of element that you would use. So it's very similar to Google Docs, and you have any component you would usually use there. It just allows you to organize data in a really nice way with folders and everything. Cool. And actually we use it as a task management platform, which I actually would not recommend, but it is, I prefer Jira or, you know, other platforms.
Wait a minute. I have never heard somebody say, I prefer in Jira in the same sentence before, unless there was a...
I thought the same thing, but hey, to each their own, right?
I mean, yeah, to each their own, but like Notion, they have tasks, like task boards, but the ability to connect tasks and to like do subtasks is horrible. So I would not recommend doing that.
But you do recommend it for like the document organization side of things.
Yes, I would definitely recommend it for the document side. So documenting code bases and for specs, for product specs, that would be really good. For onboarding documents, that would be a great option for sure.
Awesome. Yeah, I've got to check this out more myself. I know, Craig, that you use it.
Yeah, and I really like the synchronization aspects of it too. So I can write something on my phone, open up my iPad, everything's already synchronized there. I can then go to my desktop PC and I have, you know, everything available, and then you can easily add in other widgets. So you're writing a doc, you want to throw a table in there? Cool, table's there. You can sort, filter, do all kinds of really cool stuff. So it's one of those things where it does so much, it's difficult to describe. So
I wanted to circle back, Dana, to kind of the more personal aspect. We've talked a lot about the technical things, but you mentioned earlier how important it was to, you know, make that person feel welcome at the company, a part of the team. And I think the challenge these days is there's so much remote going on, obviously. Have you come across anything that you feel has worked really well that other companies could leverage? Because I feel that's definitely an area that's a big challenge. And I've personally heard from people that have said, I just don't feel part of the team. And part of that's because they're remote, but also I just don't think they had a good onboarding process for that. Any thoughts on that aspect?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, I think the buddy system works really well. So the buddy system, if you're not familiar with it, is where a senior team member takes on the new member and kind of guides them through the onboarding process. So it's not a different person each time. There's a consistent person in the team that guides you through it. So it gives you someone to actually turn to if you have questions and if you need to know something. So you have a person that, you know, will give you those answers for in whichever topic. And I think that buddy, that person, should really have an approach that this new member, they're not on a trial period. So they shouldn't be considered, you know, they need to prove themselves now and, you know, I'm better than them, and throw that out the window. You are welcoming a new team member. It's their time to make mistakes, maybe small mistakes, but still mistakes. Ask all the questions. And I've personally had an experience where I came into the team and then I didn't feel like they were giving me the freedom to actually do my process on a feature and work on a feature as I would. It was like, come on, you're taking too long. Why is it taking so long? And I kind of felt judged, you know? I kind of felt like in a time where a new member onboards to a team where you should be sensitive to them and like welcoming, I felt the opposite. I felt like, wow, maybe I'm not good enough to be on this team if I'm being kind of attacked like that or if I'm being criticized. And it kind of connects to how a person naturally could feel some imposter syndrome when coming into a new team. So not everyone feels that way, but a lot of people would. So they would think like, okay, I was accepted to this role and I went through all the interviews and I aced them, but I might have gone under the radar, and they will find out that I don't actually know what I'm doing eventually. Like, somehow I got in, but I don't really know what I'm doing.
Dana,
and I'm
Dana,
not
the good
really
news is
at the level.
I'm 25 years into my career and they still haven't found out. I have no idea what I'm doing. So
exactly. Me too. I don't know what I'm like, exactly. How even I'm doing what I'm doing. I don't know. So it's kind of, that person is already feeling that way when you're going, especially if you're like going into a more advanced role, you're going into a bigger company than you used to. You would naturally feel like, okay, do I actually belong here? And having that onboarding process and having that buddy say, it's okay if you don't understand, it's okay if you have gaps in knowledge, give you time to do tutorials even. You know, on the first 2 weeks at Fiverr, I basically did tutorials. I did Ruby tutorials. I did, you know, just gave me time to work with my buddy, go over the code base, do tutorials in my free time, just get to know the people. There was no pressure at all. And that's the feeling I would love companies to embrace. I know we're looking to get the investment off of that person as quickly as possible. But once you get that person to be comfortable with what they have to do and understand the code base, they will be a better productive member of the team eventually.
That's great feedback. I mean, I think everybody who started a new job has felt the negatives of that, as you're talking about, whether it's formal imposter syndrome or just simply, okay, I'm all excited about the job. And then suddenly you realize you don't know what you don't know. You know, all the stuff that you have to figure out, and having somebody there who is understanding and caring to let you kind of try things out and get acclimated, I think that's a really good, comfortable, it's probably the best word for it. So it's great advice.
Yeah, and we mentioned the remote setting. So I think especially in remote, it's even more important to actively approach that person every day maybe, to ask them, how are you doing? How's your experience so far? Do you have any questions? Because when you're in an office, you could be sitting next to that person and naturally it would be easier for them to approach you. But if you're just like, a line in Slack, it might be too uncomfortable for them to like start asking questions. They would feel like they're, bugging you. So you need to actively approach them, even outside of if you have meetings in the calendar with them for onboarding. You can test them, like write them a message. How are you doing? How are you doing with that thing that you started working on? Are you understanding everything? Do you have any questions? So it's super important, especially in a remote setting.
So how would you use your onboarding plan for if people specifically need to start working on like a feature or a task? How does that address that part of the work?
Yeah, so absolutely. I would go over in the initial first days that the person is onboarding to the team, I would go over the work process of approaching a new feature. I would give them a small task. It should be a really small thing. It could be fixing a bug, adding an icon, just something that is not too overwhelming, but still gives them a chance to dive into the code base, especially in an area that you know they will eventually work on. And it's a chance to go over that small ticket, but as if it was a big feature. How you would approach that ticket if it was a large feature. So you would first of all plan and do a technical spec on it, even if it's a small task. So go over what you would expect them to do on a big feature. You would expect them to have some kind of doc explaining what code changes they're going to make, what packages, what services they're going to touch, if they're going to make changes to a TypeScript model, if they're going to add a new component. So I would expect to see that in a document, and then you would go over that document with them. So ask them to explain what they're going to do. If they have any open questions that you can discuss together on the implementation and go over the pull request together. So make sure that they understand if you have any comments or criticism, explain why and what they should be doing. And as we said, if you have a document with guidelines, that would be ideal so they can actually revisit that in the future. So once you have that first test down and you've discussed it together, you reviewed it together, you can do the deploy process together. So that's a big thing for new people. They are super afraid to touch production, understandably. So do a first deploy together with the steps. Just tell them what to do and maybe share screen if you're remotely. Be there with them, but have them click the button to deploy, to start the job, and then celebrate it. Recognize that it's a big achievement to have a first deployment to production. Give them a little Slack message like, hey, team, look who did their first deploy. Amazing.
Confetti time.
Confetti time, ta-da icon. Exactly. And then go over like the monitoring that should come after. Like, should we keep monitoring Grafana or Sentry or any other tools? What you should do if this was a big deploy. So you would go do some sanity, go, you know, monitor any warnings or messages. Obviously, if there is a QA process or a staging environment, you would also go over that with that person. So that is kind of like how I would align on the work process. Do a small task, build it up together, review it together, deploy it together, and they're set to go.
I feel like I should just have you onboard me on my current job just to make sure I'm not missing anything.
I could come in, someone would onboard me, then I would onboard you, then I leave.
But, that sounds like a great idea.
But what do you do if you're the first person there? Nobody's there to onboard you. So it's like catch 20, you know, you can't really do that. So it's like the chicken and the egg.
Yeah, I mean, that's the position I'm in right now. I'm
doing There's always onboarding. A pioneer somewhere.
I wrote the onboarding plan for, you know, for the code I wrote. So I wrote an onboarding plan on that code. And now someone will go through it.
Are you doing this all in text, or do you record like videos or screen shares or anything like that? Or like,
so that's a good point. I usually do it in text, but a good thing would be to accompany it with Loom videos, just going over the flow, explaining along the way. So that's super beneficial. Also screenshots of where stuff is definitely works. I do think that it can't completely be replaced by recording, like the whole onboarding process. You have to go through it with that person because they would have questions. They would have areas that you need to expand on. They would have different areas that they would work on in the future that you know you need to focus on. So you can have some of the stuff in video for them to revisit later, but definitely not as a replacement.
Dana, this has been really, really excellent. And I want to remind folks out there that a lot of the things that we've been talking about that Dana's been dropping this knowledge on us for, we put into the show notes, even some of the tools like Notion that we mentioned, but also Grafana, Sentry, App Monitoring, Storybook. And Dan is a Storybook expert. He's our resident Storybook expert. We did a couple of episodes where Dan kind of led the conversation. So I put links into the show about that as well back here. We also put a link into there about karate black belts. So if you want to challenge Donna someday, you can.
If you want to challenge Dana,
you can go for it.
I would not advise you.
I'm not going to get anywhere near that. So
especially because my husband is in the UFC, so I would not be afraid of me. I would be afraid of him.
Yeah.
Now we got to put a link into the show notes of your husband fighting in the UFC match. There's got to be videos. Sure. So drop one of those.
His first UFC fight on November 20th. Just saying.
Nice. All right.
Wow. You can watch it on ESPN. His name is Natan Levy.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
Nice. Okay,
I'm going to have to check that out now. That's awesome. Hey, again, thank you for coming on the show today and sharing all this information with us. At the end of the show, we like to leave our audience with final thoughts. This could be on topic or just anything going on in your life. Like your husband happens to fight in the UFC, which is really cool.
Yes, it is. It's badass.
Dan, let me start with you. What's your final thought for our audience today?
My final thought is if you don't know who Morris is, you need to figure that out.
You got to get people more than that.
Morris?
Yeah. So we went and saw, I'll say it wrong, but Shang-Chi is how I would pronounce it. But
that
it's
is
not
such a good movie. Right. I just saw it 2 days ago. It's amazing.
Yeah. So you know who Morris is, Morris. I'm not going to give it away. It's the little creature.
Oh,
a little right. Cute little thing.
Yes.
Yeah, that one. So anyway, that Morris has been a topic on more threads I've seen lately. And if you haven't seen the movie, you're like, who the heck is Morris? So anyway.
Yeah, first I was thinking like Morris the cat, like that old like cat food commercial. I mean, what are you talking about? True.
Morris Day in the Time.
Yeah, lots of Morrises.
That was a fantastic movie. I 100% agree. And I had no expectations going to see it, but I loved it.
I didn't either. So anyway, that's my thought. Isn't really a thought. It's more of a, it's a pretty fun movie if you want to go see
cool.
it.
Cool. Craig, what is your final thought for our audience today?
Well, I want to say something about the movie, but I don't want to ruin anything for anyone out there. So
yeah, you can't have spoiler alerts for the movie.
Well, I know I'm not, that's why I'm not going to do it. But, you know, maybe in a couple years, we can revisit this conversation.
Yeah, don't tell them everyone dies.
Give everybody Craig. A chance. I mean,
when the chicken puts on the armor and fights Thor and then, you know, the Jedi come in and
Right.
Yeah.
And Captain America comes in and, you know.
I will say, like, we've been watching the What If series and it's hard to watch because, like, all of these beloved characters, these tragic things happen to them and you're just kind of like, I don't know what I just saw here right now. So hopefully the next one, apparently the zombie episode is supposed to be really good, but we'll see.
Drop a link into the show notes for What If you don't mind too.
Yeah.
I've only seen the first two, Craig, so I'm going to have to keep watching.
And Donna, what is your final thought for our audience today?
So I'd love to share a cool open source tool that's called Vest. And it's a validation library. It's actually, it was written by my friend who worked at Fiverr. We worked together at Fiverr and he's currently working on Facebook. His name is Evyatar. And it's an amazing library. And I'm actually working on contributing to it since he's doing a whole refactor with TypeScript and everything. It's an amazing library. Go check it out.
For my final thought today, folks out there, is first of all, I want to say thank you to all of you for listening to us all this time. 152 episodes is just pretty awesome. But I have two final thoughts on this. First, we need to do an episode on Notion, and Craig is going to be our guest because Craig has a notion of what Notion does. And if he doesn't, Dan's going to use some lotion and talk about Notion. I don't know.
Now we need to get an engineer from Notion on.
Really?
I personally know some Notion addicts, like Notion, you know, enthusiastics at that. It's at
that would be fine.
At that level.
See, that's where I want to go.
We need to get someone who's really versed at using it. And then also it would be fascinating to talk about how it's implemented and the underlying stuff.
I'd love both of those. I'd like to start with and for folks out there, maybe you're really interested in this and our audience who's really into Notion. And if you want to be a guest on our show, feel free to reach out to us on Twitter. At WebRush or at John Papa, if you'd like to. And let me know if you're interested in talking about it. I'd like to just really dive into how people are using these tools because I hear about these tools a lot. And Dan, you know this about me. I'm always like, that's great. Like shiny new stuff's always out there. And man, I get told every day. I mean, you'd be stunned at how many emails and Twitter DMs I get of, there's a great new tool. Will you check this out? And I hear about stuff, but Notion set off an alarm for me. If I hear about something enough times, it's like a little meter in my head. I'm like, all right, I've heard this thing about a dozen times now from a dozen different people. It's time to talk about it. So final thought one is more of a call to action out there, folks. If you've got thoughts on it, please let me know. Second thing is my second of my two of my four children has just gone off to college and it makes you feel a little melancholy, you know, a little, it's like, wait a minute, I was changing this kid's diapers like yesterday and suddenly they're off to college and, you know, starting their own life. And I'm super, super proud of my children for what they're doing. And it's awesome to see them grow. But at the same time, just a reminder out there to, you know, tell the people that you care about, that you care about them. So I'll leave you all with that thought today. And thank you again for all of our continued sponsors, Narwhal for being there for us all this time. Ionic, one of our newer sponsors, thank you so much. And of course, AG Grid, who's been a continued sponsor for us, as well as IdeaBlade Ward Bell, who is notoriously absent today. Where is Ward? I miss Ward. But we'll hear from us every Thursday. And thank you. See you next time.